You're listening to Awake, a men's podcast by Fellowship Bible Church.
Welcome back to the Awake podcast presented by Fellowship Bible Church. I am Sean Leary, your co-host today, joined as always by the wise Liam Weingartner.
What's up, guys?
Liam, how are you today?
Doing pretty good, man. Thanks.
Yeah. Excited to...
Liam the wise.
Yes.
Yes. So a few different kind of adjectives come out.
I'm going to need a new subtitle under my name tag, it sounds like.
We'll do it. If you heard that voice, we are welcomed in by Bill Horn today. Bill, how are you?
Hi, guys. How are you doing?
Doing really well. Doing
Thanks
well.
For being here, Bill.
Yeah, we are going to dive into to faith and technology on today's episode, but I wanted to start first by really just asking you, are you still full from the men's barbecue this Friday? What were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think I got to sample just about everything, but I definitely didn't walk away with a full plate ever because I was just bouncing around doing too many different things. But man, the stuff that I did have, the brisket, pulled pork. I did not get any of the burnt ends. I heard a lot of guys talking about how good the burnt ends were, and I was
there were like three left
bummed.
By the time I got to the line. So I had
so
one.
Disappointed it was good. That I didn't get.
They were good.
Any of those.
So I missed out really on the. I guess there was a lot of things I missed out on. I didn't know that. Like the jalapeno poppers. They were all gone.
Ben
ate like three of those.
Yeah. He probably did. I came in that day with about 50 jalapenos that I was going to turn into jalapeno poppers, and around 4:30, I was like, oh crap, I never made those. And it's like, yeah, that's not happening. So
sad.
Sorry, guys.
Missed
could
opportunity.
Have had some more poppers.
Do you still have the jalapenos?
I gave them to Ben. Oh. He's going to turn them into poppers.
All right. Well, you owe me some, Ben. That's all.
Yeah. But yeah, that was it was such an awesome event. I know a lot of men were there that we saw, some guys that I hadn't known before, some guys that I did know. So just thank you for everybody who... you know, did some barbecue, did some smoking, a lot of unsung heroes that were there or not there. The food was fantastic. Thank you so much to everybody who set up, who I think somebody asked a couple guys to stick around and clean up. And we walked in and all the dishes were done.
Yeah,
it
didn't
was
have to
incredible.
Wash a single dish.
No.
Awesome. So thank you to all you guys who did that.
Thank you so much. So we are looking forward to gathering. Some things we can work on, some things we can change. But guys, just get excited for like quarterly meetups, just more fellowship together. And it was such a great time. Speaking of things to get together for, this fourth season of Awake is starting this month, guys. It is Tuesday the 12th at 6:30 down in the Stonebridge room. It's just an opportunity to gather with guys you know or guys you don't know. Feel free to sign up and register on the website. Joe's going to take us through a six-week course again. Greg Pruitt will be involved as well. So really just looking forward to all of the knowledge that they have and growing together in that group. And then also the car show is the 23rd of this month. So you can register your car online through our FBC page. That is the 23rd at 9 a.m. Looking forward to seeing you guys all out there and going from there. So without further ado, like I said, faith and technology is the subject today. But Bill, most of our listeners know who you are. But for those who don't, tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are, kind of family, and your role at FBC.
My name is Bill.
Thanks, Bill.
I've been here in Topeka for 12 years, a little over that, with Diane and my kids. I've been married to Diane for 20 years as of July, which is pretty awesome to think about and kind of crazy to think about as well.
What'd you do for 20 years? Anything good?
Before that or after that? What are you talking about?
No, like your 20-year anniversary.
Oh, for our...
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah.
I was like, what did you do for those 20 years?
Yeah, just in general.
Like, you want me to just sum it up?
Yeah.
Did it mess up?
20 years is a big milestone.
Held on tight.
What kind of question is that? Anyway. Okay, sorry. I have to regroup because I was so confused by your question.
20-year anniversary.
For our anniversary.
Yes,
there you go. We went to Kansas City, did an overnight or two nights on the plaza, just kind of walked around. I took her to Cirque du Soleil, which is her favorite thing.
Ooh,
so,
nice.
Yeah, it was really great to just kind of stay right there. We didn't drive for basically 2 days, just got to walk everywhere.
Yeah.
It was pretty awesome.
That's so cool.
So it was a good time.
Awesome.
Sorry
I interrupted.
Yeah. You are our worship leader here at the church, have been for quite some time. So kind of how'd you, quick synopsis, you know, how'd you get here to Topeka? You know, what kind of... things do you look forward to the most on Sundays rocking and rolling?
Well, first, I I started introducing my kids, so I want to make sure I don't leave them out of the picture. So my daughter Ella is 16. My son Liam is 13.
Great name.
If you say so yourself. Yeah. He is William James Horn V.
That's though. Weird. A little different.
A little unique. So he's a freshman in high school this year, which is nuts. And then our youngest is Soren. He's 9, about to be 10. And he is full of everything.
Fireball.
So, yep. He's a wrecking ball. So, got here 12 years ago. I've been serving in worship ministry in some capacity really since I came to faith. And so I came to Christ in January of 94 at a concert. And a month later, and I know it sounds funny, I tell people this, and I always feel funny telling him, but it's the reality of it. I felt like the Lord called me to play guitar, which I had no interest in playing guitar at all whatsoever before that. And so I started, really didn't even know how to start. My dad had a guitar sitting around, had a broken string. I thought that was catastrophic. Little did I know I'd break thousands in my lifetime, you know.
So many. Some on the weekend, in the middle of service.
Yeah, I used to break a lot more in the middle of leading. So I got pretty good at adapting without a string. But
if you want to be impressed, watch Bill change a string between songs.
Well, just remove a string.
That's impressive.
I'm not putting strings on.
That's getting rid of that and then adapting your playing. Yeah. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. So my dad's cousin, Reagan, had broken the string when she came to visit. And I was like, oh, no, don't tell Dad. You know, but it had just sat in a corner for years. And a guy who had been doing the music for our church asked him. He got me doing lessons and whatnot. So, so then I got serving. I wasn't singing at all. I was just playing guitar because I thought, basically, going through puberty, my voice was shot. So I just gave up and didn't think I could sing anymore. You know, used to sing in kids' choirs and things like that, but that was it. And then just kind of slowly got pulled back into doing that. And then in college, I started helping with the college ministry there and leading their band. I'd played in like rock bands and stuff, but never like had a band for worship ministry. It was always just acoustic guitar. Small youth group, like 30 people tops. And so then started kind of directing the band for another worship leader and helping her facilitate that my freshman year, and then took over for her after she left. And that was kind of the start of it. That's where I met my mentor, who kind of shepherded me along the way and taught me to pastor through music rather than just, you know, put on a show kind of thing. And then went to seminary from there and served with him in Gainesville. Then from there, it was the first church I served at for 5 years before I came here. And then God brought me here to Topeka, which was never on my radar. Mm-hmm. Kansas was not in the picture. But
pretty different than Florida.
A little different than Florida. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So I am from Cleveland, Ohio originally. So people ask, like, why the heck are you a Cleveland Browns fan? And I'm like, I don't really have a choice. Yeah. I was born that way. some of my earliest memories are watching, you know, the Browns and AFC championships and things like that. And
fumble opportunities away. Sorry. My bad. This is a ministry podcast, not a football podcast. Yeah,
we'll fight it later. Yeah. Sean.
Was there some like pushback, you know, in your own heart and mind when you're, Topeka was starting to kind of open up as an opportunity, and just geographically, you're like, that's just something I just didn't ever see myself doing. I don't really want to live in Kansas, but obviously a torn kind of.
Well, it wasn't a don't. I just had no picture of Kansas like most people outside of like Superman, you know, like the hay fields and things like that. So in the wheat fields. So
hay and wheat. That's
so,
Kansas.
So it just wasn't even on the radar. It wasn't like a no. I mean, basically every place I've told the Lord, no, I don't want to live there, I ended up getting there somehow. So Gainesville, New Orleans, I stopped naming names because I don't want to add anything to the list. So we just had a really clear sense that God was wanting us to go somewhere else, and just we needed to leave where we were. And that's another longer story for another time. But there were a lot of reasons for that, but God just really released us finally to move and to do something different. And so that was the first time I'd really even entertained leaving where we were. And I talk about this. I was just talking about this with one of the guys I mentor about like decision making. Sometimes something that's very helpful is just kind of making a list of like pros and cons. And I know that sounds really simplistic and silly, but I think when we, so I just kind of, I still have the journal where I did this, where I wrote out all the pros and cons of staying, leaving, whatever. And just, you know, what I was kind of dreaming of in terms of a church and worship ministry and all of those things. The negatives were obviously leaving family behind and things like that if we were relocating. So I wrote all that out and I just kind of took that to prayer and like, Lord, this is what I see or what I imagine I see about the reality of the situation. Like, can you just give me clarity, change things on this list if they need to be changed? Like, tell me what I'm not seeing. Help me to just see the decision for what it is. And just, and then shortly after that, Brett Durbin from Trash Mountain Project, he was on the college staff at that church with me in Lakeland. And he had left to start Trash Mountain Project, and Fellowship became one of their first supporters. And so Joe and Brett were calling or talking, and Joe asked, hey, our guy's leaving. Do you know anybody? And Brett's like, I do. I don't know if he moved to Kansas. So anyway, and then 11 or 12 interviews later, here I am. So
yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know, Sean, if you even know this, but how Bill and I met, as Bill was actually the first one to hire me on at this church when I was an intern back in like 2017, 2018.
It's been a minute, yeah, but yeah. The internship he didn't want.
Yeah, seriously.
He wanted
you
to
get,
be the discipleship intern.
You get to choose
intern.
Three internship possibilities.
I was not on the list.
You were last.
Okay.
You were last. You were on there, but you were last. But discipleship said no, life care said no, and you were like, I guess I'll take this kid on. We'll see what he can do. So Bill was my first boss here at the church. And I remember during that season, I learned a lot from you. And I've always seen you as somebody who is just, you think really deeply about things. You think really intentionally about things. And I think that was why your name came up when we were moving to this podcast, and particularly on this topic, because you and I have had conversations about technology and faith. And so that's why I was like, hey, I know who we should ask. We should talk to Bill. Mm-hmm. So I'm just grateful that you're here and ready to talk with us about faith and technology.
Yeah, thanks for the invite, man.
Yeah. So kind of the first question that diving into the topic that we wanted to move to is what do your current tech habits look like? How do you use your phone, computer, TV? How do you currently treat these things in your life?
Yeah. So just I think that a simple word to sum it up would be boundaries. You know, I have pretty strict boundaries around things for the most part. I think the phone is the one that's the slipperiest, if that makes sense. TV, we don't really watch TV in our house. I mean, it's just, we have one TV and, well, I guess I have one in the garage, but we have one TV in the house. Really that, in terms of just broadcast television, the only thing we watch is football. On that.
Amen.
And every time I do, I'm like, man alive, I wish they just had like an option without commercials. That'd be great. So it's, you know, we don't put a whole lot into that. It's just simple. And we just have just that one TV. We don't have them in any of the rooms, and that's very deliberate. So we keep it in its place, basically. I think that's the thing we try to do with technology in our lives. My alarm clock is not my cell phone. I have an analog alarm clock. And it drives me nuts, but it works. And the first thing I touch in the morning is not my phone. Let's see.
What about social media? You on social media at all?
I am, but I have some funny habits about that. So I unfollow everybody on social media. So if you add me as a friend on Facebook forever, you know, for instance, the first thing I do, it took me a while to do it initially, to like go through everybody that I was connected with on social media and unfollow all of them, because you have to do it individually.
So you friend them and then
unfollow immediately
them.
I click on the friend thing and I go down and hit unfollow. So basically my news,
you're still friends.
We're still friends. Yeah. And I could find out what's going on in your life if I need to. If I hear something's going on, I can go. But you know, when people say, hey, did you see what I post? Nope, I didn't see anything. Like, I see my wife's posts and my mom's posts, and that's it. My feed is pretty hilarious because Facebook's trying to fill it with other stuff.
Yeah.
You might like this. You might like this. And like, nope, nope, nope. Hide. I don't want that. get out of here.
Just wife and mom.
Just my wife and my mom. So, and neither of them really post much. So it's pretty barren, and it's the way I like it.
How long would you say you've been implementing all of these kind of parts of your life?
Liam was around when I went through the unfollow.
Yeah. Because I remember you talking about Cal Newport's book on digital minimalism.
Yeah. So I read Digital Minimalism, and it really just like, which is one of the books.
Sorry for the listeners. I'm showing it to the camera right now.
Cal Newport, he is very countercultural in that regard. He's got another book called The End of Email, so which I'm eager to read that one next. But he's the first book he wrote that I read anyway was called Deep Work, and just talked about extended times of focus to really get, you know, great work done. And you can't do that when you're distracted. So that was kind of the predecessor to this book. Anyway, so, and I think it might have been the Deep Work book, actually, where he talked about that. But anyway, after Digital Minimalism, I went in and I just unfollowed everybody. And then I also, I don't have any of the apps on my phone. So I don't have Instagram, Facebook, any of that stuff on my phone. Twitter, any of, or whatever it's called now.
X.
So, so if I need to, I can go on the website, you know, on my phone, but it's really not convenient and it's more of a pain in the butt than it's worth. So that's something to discourage me from spending more time on there than I should. I put screen time limits on those things, and I have to do that for like ESPN as well. I put limits so it'll like pop up, you know, if you've been on this, you've spent more than 15 minutes on during the day on that, you know, you can, if you want to add more time, you can, but it's just, those things are reminders because we kind of blindly go through and spend time that we just don't even realize we're spending on these places and on these sites, and just having the reminder like, hey, you've been here a while.
Yeah.
It's like, oh man. Yeah. I need to go do something real. So.
Yeah. It can be real time suck.
Yeah.
And then you have that time limit pop up in your face and you're like, oh, wait, I've spent that long looking at this?
Yeah. Ooh. So it's why I make it a short time limit because I want to, you know, catch that before it goes, you know, just gets too far along. And I'm just like, how did I spend an hour doing this? Mm-hmm. You know? So I keep it short, like 15 minutes. That's the limit I put on most of the things.
I'll say it is convenient that screen time, like Apple screen time, usually pops up at like 9:05 on Sunday morning. So like everybody sitting in church, so you get like you were on the screen for 4 hours this, you know, a day, and you know, working, you know, so many of our jobs kind of rely around the phone or that's
just technology.
Technology in general. Where would you kind of say, you know, talking about some of the negative, where would you say some of the positive effects of technology in your life and your faith have kind of came from?
So one of the things that Newport talks about a lot and was kind of a refocusing for me was to view technology as a tool. And so, and it is, it can be a great tool. The problem is many of the tools that we use with technology have a dark side to them. Mm-hmm. And we just kind of blindly accept all of it, the good with the bad. And we don't ask any questions. We just kind of roll with it and say that it's of some benefit. So I'm just going to, you know, take the whole thing. Mm-hmm. But in terms of tools, like even on the way here, so I was driving and I have the phone in the holder and I could say, I had an idea for a song, for instance. And so I said, hey Siri, make a new note. And I spit out the lyrics to the songs. I couldn't stop and write, obviously, while I'm driving. I usually write everything in like a journal, but in that case, that's just a really convenient thing that helps me to do my work and the things that I care about. Mm-hmm. And so that's one way, just you know, viewing it as a tool. In terms of scripture memory, Scripture Typer is a great resource, a great technological tool to help you memorize scripture. I have a Bible study app called Logos, which I use extensively, and they have an app. So most of my resources that I have on there, which is, you know, Greek tools and commentaries, things like that, I can get all of that on my phone when I need to. Also, you know, audiobooks. I listen to a lot of books while I'm doing other things, mm-hmm. like, you know, riding the bike or walking or driving. I'll throw on an audiobook and just, you know, have something I'm learning along the way. And then I would say like a really like less serious kind of thing. I use YouTube videos to figure out how to do a lot of things, you know. Yeah. So working on my cars or fixing something around the house, like I will use a lot of those things just to as a resource to learn.
Figure out how to play Freebird.
Not Freebird, but yeah, I have used it to learn other songs. Yeah.
What about with like relationships with other people? How do you feel like technology has helped or been a positive impact in relationships with other people? Or has it?
Maybe a little, like in terms of just keeping up with some people. But mm-hmm. I mean, the question I think we need to ask ourselves is like, would we have wanted to keep up with those same people if it weren't an option? Would we have mm-hmm. really gone out of our way to try to connect with some of those people?
Like what lengths would you go
yeah.
to?
Yeah. Like how worth it is it, you know? Mm-hmm. And so like, is the juice worth the squeeze kind of thing? You know, like
I've never heard that before.
Like with all the negative and all the, all the other stuff that comes along with it, like, is it, you know, it's of some benefit. Sure.
But yeah.
And that's one of the things, like just because something's of some benefit doesn't mean we should just accept it blindly into our lives, you know.
Sure.
Do the negatives outweigh the positives? And that's where the kind of the unfollow thing kind of was the, I can still keep up with pictures from my mom and my brother and, you know, which none of them really post on Facebook anyway. But, I could still keep up with them if I need to. And I can still find, you know, friends or like our high school reunion. They coordinate all of that stuff there. You know, you're still able to keep up with those people to some extent as you need to, but it's on my terms. Mm-hmm. I guess that's the thing. Just, that's why putting boundaries around it, putting limits around it, that's – I'm telling it how it's going to serve me rather than me just kind of submitting to the way it's telling me how it's going to be, you know.
Yeah. Got two of my best friends are currently overseas doing missionary training school, and like apps like Marco Polo, WhatsApp, being able to communicate across like internationally.
Yeah.
That's been a huge blessing for us. Cause I mean, they're uprooted their lives to move overseas to go through this very difficult training regimen basically. And mm-hmm. so being able to keep up with them in that way has been really profound.
Yeah. So I think the communication side, like texting.
Yeah.
Yes, that helps. The thing that I continually feel challenged to do is allow like text messaging to not be the sum total of your conversation, but let it be something that facilitates real conversation, whether that's a phone call, face to face, doing a video call or whatever. And that's the thing, but I mean, Marco Polo is cool like that. You know, when I've been in the Philippines on a mission trip or wherever, I can record a Marco Polo wherever I am and send it to my kids and they can send me one back because we're on opposite times of the day, you know, and I'm a day ahead over there or whatever. So,
it makes me kind of think with that and kind of talking to some friends of mine that have been overseas and using WhatsApp and talking to them about it is that it's kind of hard sometimes like you to stay present overseas when the communication is so open and available back at home. So it's kind of like this indifference of, I remember they were kind of struggling and letting us know that like I'm trying to disconnect with, you know, family back home that way, you know, in a positive way, that way I can focus on what God's calling me to here. Mm-hmm. But it's tough when I can message my mom through WhatsApp at 2 o'clock in the morning or something like that and kind of stay connected. So there's just, when we talk about technology, you know, we've kind of brought it up a few times over this year because it is divisive. It can control you or it can, you know, like you said, how it's going to serve me and not, you know, the other way around kind of deal. Mm-hmm. It can be the boundaries is such a big thing in regards to how you're going to live your life accordingly and what you're going to kind of content wise onto that. So,
absolutely.
Yeah. So I think the thing that we, and there are a lot of documentaries now out there and whatnot, books like this that draw our attention to it, but we have to be aware that there is something called attention engineering. You know, and these companies are becoming masterful at keeping your attention or distracting you from what you're doing because they benefit financially when they have your attention, right? That's their thing that they're selling to advertising companies is your attention. And so if we are not aware that they are playing us and using us for their benefit, you know, then we're just kind of being pawns in that.
Yeah.
And so and, you know, in the same thing that, you know, his other book, Deep Work, I think to your friend's point, talking about kind of being distracted and kind of pulled back into another world when they're needing to focus where they're at. I think that is a much more specific and kind of bigger picture illustration of it. But that's happening in small ways for all of us every day, is we have things that we really should be heavily invested in here and now. And we're being pulled into somebody else's world constantly through notifications and things like that. So that's the other thing I would say. I didn't mention that, but I have no notifications on my phone.
Yeah.
So I have do not disturb on all the time. So one thing you can do if you're like worried about that, like Liam needs to be on watch for baby watch. So he needs to be ready to get a call from Allie at any time, you know, but you can have favorites that are allowed to bypass that. So Diane, you know, she can get through to me anytime. My kids can get through to me at any time. My mom, you know, I have a list of people that I need to be in contact with and need to be able to get a hold of me when they need to. So those people can get through, but just the general, and sometimes it's an inconvenience, you know, like certain phone calls won't come through. I'm like, dang it, I needed to get that call, they weren't on my list. So I have to call back, and yeah, it can pose a little bit of a challenge, but to me, that's, the inconvenience is worth it because I'm not constantly distracted by notifications.
Definitely.
I mean, that's why I'm old school and I have an analog watch that doesn't make any noises or tell me what to do.
get up and walk around.
Doesn't tell me I need to respond to somebody, you know. So if you have a smart watch, again, that can be a tool, can help you with your health and things like that, track things. That's all great. But if it's hollering at you all the time, then it's just another source of distraction. And so distraction is a huge enemy, and it really interrupts our relationships. It interrupts, you know, if you're in a conversation, you know, and you have your phone on the table or your watch, and you're in the middle of saying something to somebody, and your phone goes off, your mind is immediately somewhere else.
Yeah.
And you're no longer there. You're no longer present. We talked about. So, yeah, so I think it's just we have to put boundaries around the things. Mm-hmm. And if we want to keep them as tools, then we can do that. But we have to tell it, you know, what its limits are in our lives rather than just kind of accepting it wholesale. So,
yeah, so this question is a little bit different than ones that we had initially talked about. But you know, I think the world is largely using technology. Like they're people, especially people outside of the church, they're just like using it, not really thinking about it. And there might be some people like Cal Newport who are thinking deeply about these kinds of things.
Outliers.
But I think by and large, most people are just consuming without any consideration. Mm-hmm. But there's also kind of the element of like a lot of people are very active on social media. And so I remember I was having a conversation with a friend one time that really posed this to me. It's like, do we as the church, as believers, resist actively being involved on social media because of the potential dangers it poses to our soul, or do we need to find a way to responsibly engage because that's where the world is right now? Mm-hmm. Like, what would you say to something like that? I know that's kind of a challenging, nuanced question.
I mean, I think it's simple. Like, if you can do it and responsibly engage without it being a detriment to you, if you can control your usage and control yourself and your involvement and your absorption into the thing, if you don't post and then end up doom scrolling, you know, if you're of that personality, you know, I think certain people are wired where they can do that really well and other people can't, and you need to know yourself and what your limits are. And so if you can responsibly engage and not have it be a detriment to your own, you know, mental health and focus and the energy you're giving into your relationships, if you can do that and kind of just post and engage in conversation and keep it within its boundaries and then walk away and it not be a problem for you, then I think that's great. Go for it.
Yeah.
But if it's going to be a problem for you, I think you need to know that and know your limits. Mm-hmm. One of the things, you know, with engagement with social media and just technology in general, is, you know, the human mind and soul, we were not meant to know all the world's problems all the time.
Right.
We're not meant to carry that kind of burden, you know, and that's part of the problem. That's part of why I unfollowed everybody. I don't need to know everybody's junk that's going on in their lives all the time. I have a circle of people that I need to know what's going on in their lives, and I need to be able to care for them well. And if I'm constantly distracted by people that I can't do anything about except like, oh, prayers up, you know, like that. Sorry, that's another thing. You know, but like
maybe we need a part two of this. Yeah. Yeah, I know these are like a 2-hour episode.
The rant. So you know, stuff that I can't meaningfully do anything about, and it just makes me feel powerless and helpless, and you know, just it doesn't do anything good. You know,
well, it's about intentionally embracing your limitations.
Yeah,
like we are not God. But technology, I think, has a way of making people feel like they kind of are.
Yeah, you're supposed to be able to have 5 close friends and then a wider circle of like 30 to 40 to maybe I think might be 50 that you can consider friends, like in your friend group that you know some of what's going on in their lives. And then there's a wider group of like maybe 100 that are acquaintances. Then beyond that, like you're tapped out. Yeah. Like that's you can't keep up with more than that. Mm-hmm. And we somehow think like, well, maybe technology will let me have a wider close friend group and a wider inner circle or group of acquaintances and whatnot. And
but just, in reality, you give less to everybody.
You give less to everybody. And it's, yeah.
Yeah. I've always kind of felt so torn on social media and keeping up with wanting to post, you know, having a new baby. It's just so I know there's family across the country or friends that are like, hey, post this and have this. But also at the same time, like recognizing 30 years ago, 50 years ago, 2,000 years ago, having a baby, that's joy was still there, but not everybody. And, you know, so it's always interesting when you come across somebody, and I'm sure all of us in this room, well, maybe it's the exception of Bill, on this side, oh, I saw Allie post those pictures. That was beautiful. And you're like, oh, I didn't even know she posted anything.
Yeah, because I don't follow even my wife because I don't even have it.
Yeah, yeah. So I said, oh, I saw XYZ posted this, and so many people get good content or good news from that. So it's always for me been this battle of what's too much and kind of and what's not enough kind of deal of keeping everybody quote unquote happy, but also like for myself. That's why boundaries I think was so awesome. And I saw in our notes that we've got some actual principles like you've mentioned before that you've done, and we definitely encourage any of our listeners who are struggling with the boundaries that scrolling their phone is all the time. I think when you talk about notifications, it's not only from text messages, but it's from the apps that
the
that
apps, we have. Emails.
I mean, I hear there's a guy that I work with, a good friend. He has his phone always on ring, so that's always annoying. It's like, hey, silence or vibrate doesn't work. But I hear ESPN probably go off eight to 12 times a day. Dun, 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 dun. It's like, what happened? It's like,
Jonathan Taylor did stub not get traded.
Yeah. It was on the PUP or something like that. K-State, you know. So just all of this news that, like you said, takes away from the intentionality in the present to pull us into something that is just is not there. So, yeah.
And even without the notifications, like we don't even need that to have it still be a problem. Like where we're constantly just checking to see if somebody maybe we missed a notification, which is, you know, that's a sign of an even deeper issue for all of us. We're attached to these things and we feel like we can't be without them. So I think that's another thing is like creating intentional time. And I think that might be one of the endpoints, like where you are away from the thing on purpose.
Yeah.
Like take a drive without your phone, go to church without your phone, go on a date without any phones, you know, like your kids will be fine. I promise it's okay. You know, like, cause you think back and to your point just a second ago, you know, Liam, we were talking about the Reformation, you know, and Martin Luther and like the way his world was. Like he didn't get news of the world unless somebody wrote him a letter, you know, and said, hey, this happened over here. You know, like he didn't know any of that stuff. And again, we weren't meant to know everything. We were meant to have a limit to that. And so we're not meant to know what's going on over in China all the time. You know, like we're not meant to be the NSA. It's just not good for us. It's not good for our sanity. Like I think it is affecting our mental health. I think that's partly why kids have so much anxiety, because they're even less capable of handling all of that. And they know more about it than we do, because they're getting told by all their friends who are constantly connected, even if my kids are not, you know?
Yeah. Can we hit on that real quick just for some of our listeners who, I mean, we have a big age range, some that don't have kids, some that are empty nesters, some are few weeks away from having their first.
Very close.
And so how have you navigated that with your kids? And they've grown up with the internet, right? So so how has that looked? I mean, there's been some tough conversations. You know, Sally has Snapchat, you know, why can't I? Or mm-hmm. you know, they're Carmen has four TVs and they watch whatever they want.
Yeah,
and why
so
can't
I think,
I?
You know, at times it's a frustration, I think, for our kids. None of them have any social media. We have pretty strict limits on, you know, apps that they can have if they have a device. So Ella has a smartphone. My 13-year-old has a flip phone because he's the more tech prone yeah. of the two. And so, but it's been really sweet. You know, I was just thinking this the other day, like he has phone conversations all the time with his buddies. His friends will call him and they will talk for hours. They'll play video games together, like talking on the phone or having a video chat while they're playing games together. And so they're interacting with one another and they're actually having to learn how to get along if they're playing a cooperative game and they're having to, like, you know, take turns, you know, benefiting and getting whatever, you know, in the game that they're playing. So that's been really sweet to see, but like they'll just call each other and talk. And so, you know, and I'm good with that. I'd rather conversation. I want to encourage that. And again, keep it as a tool for conversation and for engagement. But, you know, I think if you really help your kids understand the value, the why behind mm-hmm. the decision, like my daughter has, she never talks about Facebook or any of the social media things that she's missing out on. Like she doesn't talk about it. She doesn't say, oh, I wish I could have that. That's not what's happening. You know, like she understands the value and has bought into it completely. And I've seen that benefit in her relationships and her own mental health, you know. Mm-hmm. So much so that she's almost like she tries to influence her friends and, like, you know, encourage them to do the same. You know?
An offline influencer.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm an oxymoron.
You know, yeah. So I think it's really understanding your why. Like, why do you care about it being a thing and helping your kids understand that? And that applies to everything. You know, like one of the big things, my daughter just had her first date.
Yeah.
A couple weeks ago.
We don't have to open that. We don't have to go.
But, you know, we really sold the value to her of being friends first with whatever guy, because, like, if you can't be friends with that person, then why would you want to be around them for the rest of your life? You know what I mean? So really prioritizing friendship. And she really understood the value of that and has developed this amazing circle of friends that she spends a ton of time with. And this guy came from that circle of friends, you know, and they have the accountability of their friend group because they all know them and are all up in their business, you know, in some ways. And so that's really healthy because they get called out if they're being dumb. But they also, you know, it's kind of, they've vetted one another in a sense, like they've made it as part of that friend group and are accepted into that. And so, yeah, it's really good. And she really just bought into the value of that. So I think it's a values conversation rather than just a rules conversation. If you really help them understand the value of why, then it's not as much of a fight. Now, there'll still be, again, they'll still be missing out. You know, mm-hmm. I'm missing out on this because so-and-so did this on there and I didn't know anything about it. You know, that's – but again, do the negatives outweigh the positives for a teenager in particular? Probably.
Yeah.
There's so much toxicity in that. So,
yeah, I was reading an article this morning that was talking about this study that the American Psychiatric Association conducted, and this was back in like 2017. Mm-hmm. So I can only imagine the data has gotten a lot worse
it's
now.
Way worse. Yeah, way
but
worse.
They surveyed 144 participants, and they were assessed for like physiological and psychological function before and after an internet session. And there were like two groups of people in this study. One group self-identified as having like problematic mm-hmm. internet usage, and the other one was like, nah, I don't really have a big internet problem. And the individuals who identified as having like high issues with internet displayed increases in heart rate, systolic blood pressure, as well as reduced mood, increased states of anxiety following the end of their internet session.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it was like, and they went on to say that these changes after the end of their internet use are similar to those seen in individuals who have ceased using sedative or opioid drugs.
Yeah.
It's like, it's just insane.
Well, and that's the whole thing. Just cell phones, internet, whatever, like it's meant to trigger the same things that drugs do.
Yep.
They have that same effect on us. It's a boost that we get, and then we get addicted because we want more of it, and we keep coming back. Yeah, and we just have to recognize what it is that we're addicted to it and call it what it is, be honest with ourselves, and then put some boundaries around it. So even with, like, screen time, you know, if our kids play video games and, you know, we have pretty strict limits, we keep it to an hour, for them. And again, a lot of people don't have that limit. That's their call. But you know, they get frustrated. You know, they're playing a like Zelda game, and like it's taking longer than that to get the thing done. Like, sorry, turn it off. You know, okay. We're done. You can save it and pick up tomorrow. Mm-hmm. That's fine. You know, so, but we see they become monsters the longer and longer you let them engage with screens, because I think it's somewhat control thing, you know, with video games in particular. Like, I'm in control. I'm doing the thing I want to do. And then the real world, I can't control much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
yeah.
So
it's like these 6 year olds going on 16, these 10 year olds going on 20 with it. It's like accelerating all of this. Like,
yeah. And so it's this. It's not reality, and it really, I think, does us a disservice when we think that we can control everything in life when we can't control hardly anything around us, you know.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it is a tool for deformation in a lot of ways.
Yeah, if we're not careful. So, yeah. You know, it can be fun. And again, like, I don't want to throw it all out, you know, mm-hmm. because it does teach them some stuff, but the real world teaches you more, you know.
Yeah.
Being in nature teaches you more. You are better formed by being out in the real world and being in real conversations and, you know, being in nature, being in the dirt, all of those things. And that goes for us as adults too, as men. Like, that's the same thing. We are better formed by being in the real world and real conversations, being in the woods, being in nature, being in the water, whatever. We get more from that than being in a virtual world.
Being in scripture, quite, you know. I remember hearing the a sermon kind of briefly through, I don't know if it was doom scrolling, but it was scrolling. And he had mentioned how, you know, the way we scroll our phones, if the Bible was, you know, replace that with the Bible and you're just, oh, I'm just scrolling through James today. Oh, look what he had to say on this and how it applies to my life onto that. So, you know, I in my head, I think, oh, I've got a time limit on fantasy football. That's why I don't get back to trades as quickly as often. And then, you know, ESPN or social media. Imagine if we had that same thing on my Bible, you know, I'd be like, oh, time's up. You know, kind of like, wow, I spent that much time, you know, in scripture today. I just think for some of the listeners out there, I hope that these conversations are, you know, we're looking in the mirror, the man in the mirror. How are my habits. Is this me? What side of the fence am I on? And I would say I'm a lot closer to the other side of the fence than what Bill is. And that's just being honest with herself. Mm-hmm. Do I need to set up boundaries? Do I need to have conversations? Do I need to read some of these books that Bill has mentioned, whether it's digital minimalism? There was a reference to 12 Ways Your Phone Is Changing You by Tony Renicky.
Ranky.
Yeah. So I think there's a ton of information that we can have towards starting to change our outlook of what that looks like.
So let's get practical.
Yeah.
Let's get really practical with some ways that we can begin to create healthy relationships with technology, because I think I want to avoid like the two opposite extremes, like eliminating technology and our use of it completely. It's just not. It shouldn't be an option, and it can't be. Most of our jobs require it. So on some level, we have to use it. So, but on the other side, it's not using it all the time and for everything. So what are some ways that we can kind of begin to find some balance? You've talked about boundaries. What are some really practical ways we can build in healthy tech habits into our personal lives?
Yeah. So I think the phone in particular is the most challenging, because it has the potential to be a tool, a toy, an entertainment device, a game, you know, all of these things. And if we need to view it more tool-like, you know, like I have ratchets and some of them are maybe a little more polished than others, but I'm not sitting there looking at my ratchets and be like, oh man, look how pretty this is. You know, like, so make it look like a tool. So if you need to do a black background on your phone or go black and white, you know, you go into the accessibility settings and you turn on color filters. You can make it black and white by triple tapping the power button. That's what I do. And it's amazing how much less appealing the thing looks when it's black and white. You know, get rid of apps that shouldn't be on your phone. Like, in terms of, you don't need a bunch of games on your phone. You don't need a bunch of things to distract you. Like, you need to be bored sometimes, and that's okay. Like, boredom leads to solitude, which is, solitude is freedom from input from other minds. And we need time like that. We need time where somebody else is not telling us anything and it's just us and God. and we are alone with him and with our thoughts, and we're able to process life with him. Mm-hmm. And that's like, we need that to be healthy. And so again, so view it as a tool, and that's what putting boundaries around it is for, is to keep it as a tool and not let it spill over into these other things. Mm-hmm. And we talked about, you know, putting it away from you at night, having like a time limit, have a, you know, one of the things Liam has in here is like, you know, put it to bed before you, like a parent, mm-hmm. you know, like, so I think that's good. Just kind of having a limit where you, and that helps you sleep better too, because, you know, the light from your phone is not good for your sleep. So there's a lot of other benefits that we just don't even realize sometimes.
We have one on here that's that digital Sabbath. So once a week, removing tech, digital sabbatical, 2 weeks a year removed from tech. So have you implemented that before into your kind of life, Liam, as well into that?
And yeah, when we do Sabbath practice, we try to you know, we do it from time to time where we're just like, all right, we're taking a break. So like over, I don't remember what, it was sometime this summer. We just took a week where we were trying to like, no screens in the house. We're not going to have the TV on. We're not going to watch anything unless we do it as a family. And so that's the other thing with like screens. We try to at least do some stuff when we're doing it together. So if we're going to watch a movie, it's not like go watch a movie by yourself and isolate. It's something we do together and keep it as part of our family time together that we're enjoying together. Playing video games, we encourage playing with somebody rather than just you and that screen and no interaction whatsoever. So I think trying to – whatever you do. So the Sabbath thing I think is great, mm-hmm. taking a break from it and realizing how – not dependent on the thing we really need to be, you know, like yeah. I don't need this in my life to survive. I can live without it. And that's an important step. And that's part of, I mean, same with, that's the whole Sabbath idea is yeah. taking a break from work. Like I don't need to work to have identity.
Yeah.
I am a child of God and I'm his first and he's the Lord over all. I don't need to be moving the ball forward. I don't need to be answering emails today. I don't need to be, you know, getting stuff done for life to move on.
And that's been the hardest thing about practicing a digital Sabbath for me. And I can't speak for Allie, but she and I both on our Sabbath days, when we're doing it the way we intended to and set out to do it, phones are off, no screens, and we're just together. And we're spending that day in rest and worship and delighting in the things that God has made, whether it's through really good food, going on walks, spending time with family and friends. But man, the hardest part about it for me is just cutting off connection to things outside of what I can see, hear, smell, taste, touch. It's like, man, you just kind of feel yourself slowly, slowly, slowly start to come down from that. But it takes a while because I want to know what's going on. Or it's like, I think I'm so important that people need to get a hold of me on that day off. And that I'm the only one that can solve whatever problem they might have when they reach out to me. It's like, Liam, are you really that important? No, you're not. Turn your phone off and rest. Remember who God is and that you are his creation.
Good. And on the flip side of that, sometimes when you're away from your phone for, you're like, oh, I took a rest from this for 3, 4, 5, 6 hours, and you come back to your phone and you're like, I don't have any notifications. Yeah. Yeah. There's kind of that like flip side to it. It's like, wow, nobody needed to reach out to me. So it's kind of that,
it was fine.
That identity.
The world moved on and it was fine.
Yes.
So the other thing I would say is like asking questions. Mm-hmm. Don't just blindly accept whatever it is. One of the questions that Cal Newport asks in his book is, does this technology directly support something that I deeply value? And that's the only condition on which you should let one of these tools into your life. And then if it passes that, then the next question is this tech the best way to support this value? You know, he says, the fact that it offers some value is irrelevant. The digital minimalist deploys technology to serve the things they find most important in their life and is happy missing out on everything else. And so you have to be okay with missing out on some stuff. I think you just have to come to grips with, I'm going to miss out on stuff and it's fine. And again, I'm going to miss out on some stuff that happens at work today if I'm shutting it down and not connecting at all, and it's going to be fine. I'll live, they'll live, I'm not going to lose my job, it'll be okay. You know, like the world will go on. And then how do I maximize its value and minimize its harms? You know, that's the other, like, so those are kind of the three questions. Just, if I'm going to accept it, is this, you know, does this actually support something I deeply value? So I use technology to help make music, to record music, to take notes. to memorize scripture. Like those are things I deeply value, right? So I utilize it for that. And that's why I keep those things around. You know, I've thought about going to the what is it called? The light phone. Have you heard of that thing? It's it's basically like a Kindle reader phone. So it's e-ink. So it's not a backlit screen at all. And it's got like maps, music. I think you can text message on it, but that's it. No email, web browser. It's got, and you make phone calls. Okay. Yeah. So it's a phone. It's
kind of a dumb phone.
It's a dumb phone. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's got a screen so you can view maps. The maps are not like, that's the thing. I haven't jumped to it yet because the maps are not real great. And that's actually a tool that I do use when I'm traveling and taking stuff places, wherever, or doing road trips and stuff. So that is a useful tool. So that one, it's a little slow with the e-ink, kind of refreshing, whatever. It's that, so eventually it'll catch up there. And that'll be good. I think so. Yeah. But anyway.
Yeah.
So just, yeah. Viewing it as a tool, I think, is one of the biggest questions. Yeah. And then making a priority of solitude, which is goes along with the Sabbath idea. Yep. I think that time that we have that's free from input from other minds, whether that's from social media, even music, reading, like none of that. Like scripture, that's okay. Like that's the – you and God is the only input you should have during those times of solitude. And so, you know, blocking out everything else during that time and having dedicated times where you are alone on purpose and allowed to be alone with your thoughts and with your emotions and processing all of that stuff, that is huge for our health. And basically the phone has ruled out all those little moments throughout a day where we would typically have solitude because we're like, oh, I'm bored. I'm going to check my phone and see what's going on in the world, right? And we've immediately are gone from that moment of solitude where we were alone with our thoughts. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times we're scared to be alone with our thoughts, which is another problem that we have. Blaise Pascal, Liam and I were just talking about this before the podcast here, but Blaise Pascal, he was a just brilliant dude from the 17th century, I believe. But all of humanity's problems stem from from man's inability to sit quietly in a room alone. You know, like, and I think that's because we don't, really, that's where we develop our moral courage. That's where we develop our certainty about the things that we value and believe is in those times of quiet rather than just letting other people tell us what we should believe or other people tell us what we should do or how we should act. Like really processing, like, how do I feel about that? Like if we don't take time alone, we don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Do I really believe this? Do I really feel that strongly about this thing that I'm willing to fight for it? You know, what are the things that are the most valuable in my life? And what are the hills that I'm willing to die on? You know, to know that you have to have time by yourself to really cement those things and to be. And that's, to me, that's one of the biggest parts of being a man is really knowing those things and knowing what hills you're willing to die on and fight for. And you can't know that. You can't have moral courage if you don't have time alone in solitude. So.
I know we need to wrap things up because we're getting close to the end here, but I'm about 3 weeks into a media and entertainment fast. And one of the things that has come up during that time is a lot of questions, a lot of spiritual questions, internal questions, doubts even, that I think technology and entertainment was keeping at bay. And then as soon as I had this space to have to be alone, have to sit with my thoughts. Oh, I'm eating lunch now. I can't look at my phone. I can't watch TV. What am I thinking about? What's been on my mind? It's like, oh, I don't want to think about these things because it's hard and it takes work to process through them. But I've been so thankful for the time to have that space to process these things with the Lord. And I'm not all the way there yet. And I still have weeks to go left on this that I'm trying to really challenge myself. But we need that space
absolutely
to really process through those things. And and entertainment and technology for me can be a real strong numbing agent.
Yeah, it totally is.
To keep me from going where the Lord is wanting to go.
Yeah, and sometimes we're scared to be alone with our thoughts.
Yep.
We're scared about what will happen in that space or what we'll think about. Where our mind will go, and you know, you talked about doubts. Like we're afraid of having doubts because, like, oh, that means I don't believe. Like, no, like doubts are part of the process. You need to work through your doubts to be sure of things. You know, like if you can't work through your doubts, if you can't come out of the other side of that and really say, like, no, I've worked through that and I believe that, then that's a problem. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But like, we need to address those doubts. Them not being addressed doesn't actually help us grow at all or be more sure of our faith. They're still going to be there. Just they're buried. You know, we're hiding them and covering and really numbing ourselves to those things. So we really do need that time to work through our doubts, work through our feelings, work through the hurts that we've experienced and whatnot, and do that with the Lord. So
I kind of want to wrap up with just this challenge to all of our listeners is just to really test your use of technology like you would a physical elimination diet. And if you're not familiar with that, it's basically you get rid of different kinds of food from your normal everyday eating, and then you slowly introduce things back to see how it affects your body. It's a really simple way to see if you have allergies or intolerances or things like that. So any of our GI struggling friends out there will know what I'm talking about. But do this with your technology. Cut it all out, slowly work things back in, and see how it affects your devotional life. See how it affects your relationships. See how it affects your mental and emotional health, your physical health. It's worth a shot.
Yeah, and well, you know, Cal Newport talks about that. Like, when you reintroduce it, just only reintroduce the things that pass this test.
Yeah.
Does this really support something I deeply value in life? If it doesn't, then don't reintroduce it. I don't need it. And then you might find that you don't miss it nearly as much as you thought you would. Mm-hmm. You know, like when I was a high schooler and TV was more of a thing and was like the only thing technology-wise. We didn't have cell phones because I'm old. But, you know, so when we did like would go through Lent, that was one of the things I would often give up is just no TV for 40 days and none of it. And I'd come out on the other end and be like, I didn't really miss that at all. I thought I would, and I didn't. It took a couple, you know, takes a little bit of time to detox and just, you know, not get twitchy. Like, I got to go back and check that, you know. But then after a while, I was like, you know, I got a whole lot more time to do things I care about. Mm-hmm. And you may find the same when you kind of go through that fast and kind of removal and then reintroduction. It's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just thinking with the groups meeting up next month, you know, just try this out and be accountable to each other, you know, figure out if it's working and this idea of this Awake podcast and meeting in groups and asking questions and just continuing to grow together, guys, you know, that's all I, you know, am thinking about as Bill and Liam give, you know, multiple ideas on how to continue to, this is all around being more Christ-like, having a better idea of and a grip of not being worldly, but to think heavenly. So, yeah, I just am looking forward to meeting with my group. I'm just thinking in my head, if you guys are listening to the podcast and have any questions, feel free to stop, you know, Bill, if he gets a passing second, you know, in the atrium, or Liam, or we'll have a list of the resources, some of the books that we've got here today. We'll put that on the email, and then just dive deeper, guys. You know, that's the idea, as being awake, aware, and intentional to what God's calling us to do. So, you got any final thoughts, Liam, on kind of what's going on?
Bill, I just appreciate your consideration and intentionality thinking through this topic and really just providing us with really good things to be chewing on ourselves. So, thanks for your time.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Thank you guys for inviting me into the conversation. Yeah. I appreciate it.
And guys, we'll see you on the next episode of the Awake Podcast.